Hello and welcome to Now You've Seen It. I am the host of Gregor Sprague, and joining me on the panel is Steve McGrath. Steve, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad, Greg. Thanks very much. A little under the weather, but hanging in there.
Yeah, you and me both. Like, mine's not as bad as yours, but it's like the cough button will be used here. Oh, but yes. Enough of the small talk. We got to introduce our guest. He is, and I realized in the outline I switched it. But he is, well, I'll let him explain to himself, because he's in all actuality our third guest to try to get this, but whatever. Third time is the charm. Hunter Regan. Hunter, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. And we're gonna talk about a movie.
I was really hoping that's what we were gonna talk about, and it wasn't gonna be Chinese food, but
I mean yes. So for those of you guys who do not know what this is, because this is a new show, this is called Now You've Seen It, and we are going to talk. Hunter has not seen the movie that we are talking about. To peel back the curtain here, neither had I before before the powers that be are like, you're doing this one. I'm like, all right, cool. I haven't seen the movie, so it'll be fun. Keep in mind, this is not to shame the people, because there are millions of movies out there, and it's hard to watch everything.
Or anything.
Yeah, or anything. Trust me, as a wrestling fan, I can attest to this. So, Hunter, how big are you into science fiction? Basically, I'm just trying to gauge as to sort of why this would have been something that you missed.
This is it's actually a good question, because I am a sci-fi fantasy fanatic.
Nice.
So why this movie? I'm guessing I probably didn't watch it because it's 2 days long, and I mean, that was just too much time to commit to the movie, and I thought that it kind of looked cheesy.
Okay. And that's all understandable. For me, it was, and again, I'm gonna sort of interject myself a little bit here, because I have the same thing. You know, like you, I'm a big sci-fi fantasy person. I'm into everything, if I'm going to be honest. Fine. But it came out 2009. I was also, where I'm going to show my age, I was 20 in college, you know, so it's that broke college kid. So it's like, okay, I didn't want to pirate it, because, you know, I also, not that I have paranoia, but it's was one of those things, like, I'm like, all right, the FBI is going to come in here. And also, like, living where I lived at the time, internet wasn't the best to download a decent quality of the movie. But yeah, so it was just one of those things, like, it's like, I'll catch it later. And later came up 2 weeks ago.
I was in the same spot.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is where we cue an ad.
Hello, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, the host of Just the Tipsters, America's favorite true crime podcast, because people are awful and kill each other. Hi, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, host of Just the Tipsters, America's favorite true crime podcast. Have you ever wanted to kill someone? Heyo, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, host of America's favorite true crime podcast, Just the Tipsters. And what makes Just the Tipsters America's favorite true crime podcast? It's because I said so. That's why. That's okay, right? I can say that. I mean, guard!
Just the Tipsters with Melissa Morgan is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Stitcher, theradio.com app, and wherever pods are cast. Subscribe, rate, review. You'll be glad you did.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, Rose, and I think a little fear. Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
All right, so the movie we are talking about is James Cameron's Avatar, not to be confused with The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra.
I watched all episodes of both series for this tonight.
I've read the comics.
Are you kidding me? Is this the Blue Monkey people? Can you guys hold on for a second?
Yeah. We'll wait 4 hours for you to watch the movie.
I'll be back in about 3.5. It's fine. Kidding.
I thought we were doing something about Mary, so I watched the wrong movie.
I don't know. Hey, I would trust me. That's a great movie. But yeah, so Avatar came out 2009, stars Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Stephen Lang, Michelle Rodriguez, and Sigourney Weaver. Like I said, written and directed by James Cameron. Other stuff like that I will pepper in, but I will say on Rotten Tomatoes, it has, at the time of recording, an 82% rating. But let's just get into the nitty-gritty. I believe we have a fake trailer that will be played right now.
Jake has had it tough. First, he was injured in the Marines and can't walk. Then Tom, his genetically identical twin brother, dies, working for Resources Development Administration. Luckily, Jake can get his legs fixed, but that costs money. And even more luckier, Jake can fill in for Tom and make all that megacorp cash. All he has to do is get the no-no for Uium from the blue native Navi by any means possible. But instead, he meets a girl, falls in love, and rebels against a completely non-evil genocidal megacorp. Starring Perseus from the new Clash of Titans movie, Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, Letty from the Fast and Furious movies, Phoebe's little brother, and Dana Zool. From the director of The Terminator, The Abyss, and Titanic, sure, take the whole door, Rose. James Cameron's Avatar, part one of, say, 5?
But yeah, so we're going to discuss the movie. So, Hunter, being a sci-fi guy, how does this sort of rank for you a little bit? Like, in the sci-fi, like, did you enjoy it for that side of it, or...
I kind of put it in a box where it's the sci-fi and fantasy kind of combined. And I felt like I was watching Star Wars meets Lord of the Rings with really bright colors.
That's a really good, so sort of like the palette a little bit of Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
Is how I would say that, you know, with the colors and stuff. I sort of come at it. I love that comparison. I really do. That's brilliant. With where I did it, because this was filmed for 3D, like getting into I learned some of the facts and behind the scenes stuff, but way before, like when they were doing the press for the movie, like where James Cameron like basically came up with the technology to make the cameras, and get all that stuff working, to where it really started the new introduction of 3D movies, and seeing that in this movie. There are movies that I've seen before for 3D or not for 3D that you see where they play to the camera. I didn't really see that with this. Now, I don't know if it was because watching it on Disney Plus, they did some editing or whatever, like there have been reports of them doing. But I don't know. Did either of you catch that? Like where they're, I only caught like, I think two scenes that I remember where they're like, oh, this is the 3D part.
I mean, the visuals when they're on the planet and and during the fight scenes, especially, I think that's where you kind of lost some of the 3D parts that would have been awesome in the theater that you don't get at home. But yeah. aside from that, I felt like I was watching a movie that was made for my television.
Yeah. What about you there, Steve?
I would agree. I didn't see anything that was like overtly, you know, someone catches the baseball before he hits you in the face kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I get 3D and why it's fun. I've never been a big fan of it. I've never gone to the movies to see a 3D movie, just because that in and of itself to me is a distraction from what has turned out to be these days kind of a difficult thing to nail down in terms of what's happening and what's going on. So, but no, I didn't pick up anything that seemed terribly overt, that to say that, you know, this was supposed to be a 3D movie.
No. Yeah. There, and I bring that up because right around that time, like I said, with the cameras, where it was, you know, how I would prefer them to film 3D as opposed to that virtual rotoscoping, where if you do it wrong, it tends to look like paper cutouts, with some depth. I remember my mom taking me to, because she wanted to go see this movie. I'm like, all right, let's go, and we went and saw the Step Up 3D. And all throughout, I'm like, this is playing to the camera too much. This is like losing some of the effects. And I don't remember the story because, I mean, those movies have stories. And right. Yeah. And I did research afterwards. I'm like, oh, this is the same technology. So it's like looking back at it now, I figured I'd ask that for you guys because it intrigued me to where, like, even like Deadpool. Like Deadpool, there are scenes where I know they didn't film for 3D, but it's like if they did, it'd be like, okay, that's why there's this shot. That's why, you know, it's like, okay, cool.
No, I didn't get a ton of that. I felt like it was made to be watched in regular television.
Yeah, which is good. That's I think what all good movies should be. They should be able to, you know, wherever you're watching it, it should feel right that you're watching it that way. So let's just dive into the movie. So with this, what did you think about like the acting? Let's start with there. Like, I mean, they're besides Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana, who hadn't been in much beforehand, how do you feel about the acting choices that were made?
Well, the guy who plays the army colonel or general or whatever he is, I thought it was extremely over the top. I felt like I was watching a spoof commercial or something of somebody showing me what it's like to be in the army. I mean, that's really how he acted it out.
Your typical super tough army dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just call him Cable.
That'd be a good one. I'm making a note of that for, you know, if we ever do some of the Deadpool and cast the remake.
And I know we're talking about the acting portion right now, but
yeah,
it was hard for me to really break down the acting because I thought the dialogue was horrible.
Yeah.
And when the dialogue is bad, I mean, even if you're a great actor, you're only going to do so much with bad dialogue.
Yeah. And I'm very loose with this. So it's like, I was just sort of thinking, okay, let's go into the acting. Cause I wanted to stay a little bit away from my big pet peeve with this movie.
Yeah.
Because I did enjoy the movie. Don't get me wrong, but I felt like the writing, it was so predictable and, you know, not knowing basically anything, that, you know, about the movie beforehand, except for more of the technical side of things and that, you know, what some of the people played, it was like coming in with the voiceover, which turns out to be the audio journal. I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to get this, you know, him as the narrator throughout the whole thing. And then like after the first act into the second act a little bit, that goes away and then it comes back and it's like, pick a lane, James Cameron.
Right. No, I completely agree with that. 100%.
Yeah.
And I was bored to tears by those little checkups of his. I'm like, okay, you're telling us what happened and how you feel about it. I don't care. Move on.
Yeah. And it's like it worked at first. It worked for the world setting up.
Sure.
And, you know, because
I am. Here's what my deal is. Here's why I'm here.
And it's almost like he put it in there because the movie is about space and it's supposed to be in a space movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you watch any space movie and the guys are in the spaceship and they're doing a video log.
Yeah. No, true, true. Like, even on TV shows now with them, when they're set in space, they're all, you know, I think going back to Star Trek where it's, you know, Captain's Log, you know, with all that.
It's a space movie. I'm supposed to have it in here. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too, when you're dealing with the fact that you've got this guy who is a Marine and he's plopped into the middle of all these doctors and scientists and things like that, as far as the team that was dealing with the avatars and with the people there, the expectation is that you would document the holy heck out of everything. That's what they would do. I'm sure they're doing more video logs than Sam Worthington's character was, Jake. I mean, it makes sense that they would have him do it. Also, from the overview standpoint of, you know, okay, you're his twin, but you're an unknown quantity. We don't know who the hell you are. We don't know what your deal is. So we want you to tell us and we're going to read it and listen to it and, you know, look it over and be on your back about it. If you say one thing that's out of whack. So I get the practical aspect of it, but to your point, Greg, yeah, pick a lane. Is he going to do it or is he not going to do it? You know?
Yeah. It almost screams like in Blade Runner, like I can't think of the director of that one for some reason, but where they put in the voice narration just to appease the studio, and it's,
which is probably the case with that and with this.
But I mean, I don't know. That was, I think, my biggest like some of the stuff, some of the acting, it's like, okay, I can forgive it, especially with the fact that, you know, at this time, I mean, you had, you know, you had Zoe Saldana, who I don't think had been in really anything of note at that point. And Sam Worthington, where, you know, I'm looking at the trivia on IMDb, and they said that Matt Damon and Jake Gyllenhaal were the studio's first choices to play Jake Sully. And then James Cameron decided to go with the lesser known Sam Worthington. Okay, great. But even then, I don't see those saving the movie either. You know, if it was Jake Gyllenhaal or Matt Damon.
No, he was fine as an actor.
Yeah.
I thought he was one of the best performers, to be honest.
I did too. I did too. And it was maybe a $250 million budget. I mean, they could have had anybody.
Maybe
they
it was because he was the one I didn't know. I have a hard time. I love Sigourney Weaver. I love, you know, Giovanni Ribisi. You know, I love those actors. But it's like I'm having a hard time seeing Dr. Grace Augenstein instead of Sigourney Weaver. And oh, that's the guy from Saving Private Ryan. Okay, all right. Well, but who's Parker Selfridge? Who's that guy? Is he a producer? I don't get it. So
yeah,
with Sam Worthington, his character is new to me. I don't know who that entity that I'm looking at is to begin with. And to some extent, Zoe Saldana, although she had already been in the first Star Trek reboot movie earlier this year, still, you know, I'd only seen it 600 or 700 times between when it came out and when Avatar came out. So, you know, I'd only seen it a few times relative to how much I normally watch Star Trek. But, you know, again, so his performance, now looking back at it and maybe knowing him a little bit more, from the Clash of the Titans, I think, and whatnot. I think those are the only other movies I've seen him in. But again, you know, it's those quieter moments that he is able to have, both as himself and as the Avatar, I think impressed me, partly because I know it was difficult to act in the scenario of having all the crap all over you and the, you know, the buttons on your face and the suit on and the camera in your eyeballs and all that kind of stuff. But I was probably most impressed by his performance, given, you know, who he's around. And that's not to take anything away from any of the other actors. It was because I didn't know who he was.
Yeah. And that honestly, I think works the best, with a lot of them, because where I've always had that where, even now, like there are actors that I know their name, but it's always when I go, when I see them in something else, I'm like, oh, it's like David Tennant, for example, I'm like, oh, that's the 10th Doctor. It's not, like, that's the one that comes through first, and that I then have to go, no, he has a name, moron.
And then you start Googling.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it is with a lot of the other ones. Like Giovanni Ribisi, I'm like, I know this guy. I know who he is. And it wasn't until a little bit later, I'm like, oh, that's who it is. Other ones, like, I've seen, and it's funny because I've seen Stephen Lang in movies where I know it's Stephen Lang, but he's the character he is. Michelle Rodriguez, same way. Sigourney Weaver, same way. Even with, you know, Zoe Saldana, who, you know, is Gamora and is Uhura in Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Trek respectively. You know, hers, it was easier because it was all CGI. You never saw the human equivalent, but you're right. I mean, Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana were the two that were easy to blend in. You know, like,
and they were the highlights acting wise of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I give Zoe Saldana a ton of credit for just when she had those moments where she had to be as angry as she needed to be, or as troubled or sad or just all over the place with those deep, dark, you know, you'd forget for a second that that's a digital creation part, you know, because of how they did it and captured the face and all that kind of, but that's her acting. You know, hopefully whoever ultimately did the deal into the movie didn't, you know, I'm going to spruce that up a little bit. Watch her get an Oscar because of me. But I mean, you know, just the intensity in her face and her eyes as that character, knowing that that's not who she looks. That's not what she looks like. That's not who she is. Yeah, I give her a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. And a make-believe accent too. I mean, it's an accent that doesn't exist. And I thought she did a pretty good job of not just kind of giving us a generic, like a Hispanic mixed with an Asian accent or something. It kind of sounded like a fresh accent that you had never heard before.
Right.
No, yeah, that's true. Like, look, again, you guys are sort of hitting at things that are on the trivia page. Like, so we should point out that the Na'vi language was created from scratch from a doctor. I think he's this guy, Dr. Paul R. Frommer, has created languages for movies, you know, for a bunch of movies. And I think he's done like Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And he created 1,000 words for this, you know, for the Na'vi language. And another one I saw in here was that Sam Worthington actually had a better, because he's a born in the UK but raised in Australia, so he's got, you know, an Australian accent. It was easier for him to hop into the Na'vi language than it was to do his American accent.
Oh, sure.
Actually, pretty cool.
Yeah. So one of the things I'll sort of point out, hitting on what Steve you were talking about, because I mean, so imagine this, because we're in 2020 right now when we record this. This was originally planned to be released in 1999.
Yeah, no way.
This is, yeah. And it was, you know, supposed to take place, or, you know, take place. It was supposed to be released after Titanic, but James Cameron then decided that the technology wasn't there.
He was right.
How, yeah. Do you see a version of this at all that could have taken place 10 years before it was actually released?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It wouldn't have looked as impressive, and it probably, the scale wouldn't have been as huge. Maybe it'd have only been 90 minutes long, but yeah, I mean, you know, think of movies like one that stands out to me is Krull from like 1982, 83. Mm-hmm. I'm dating myself here. I'm 1,000 years old, you know, or, you know, people might pull out, what's the one with, David Bowie and what's her face? You know,
Labyrinth.
Great movie. You know, movies like that, where it's complete production design. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a built world, but they did it literally, not digitally. And there's nothing. Look, Avatar looks to me as real as any alien planet I've ever seen in any movie ever.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so not taking anything away from that. That's why it came out when it did. He didn't want it to look like a Star Trek, you know, set, like planet.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had those colors as vibrant as they were,
or the 10 effect years or that effect of them walking across the foliage and it turning color as they do, whatever. And you know, so I'm glad he waited, because it does allow you to get, you know, into the world a bit more, and to maybe, you know, helps you suspend that disbelief just a little bit more. There are times I think where he goes overboard. I mean, you know, people kind of make fun of like the Michael Bay crane shot in every movie, and every scene shift, there's a crane shot where he swoops in and whatever. To me, it felt like any time that we shifted venue, there was this huge introduction to that new location. You know, where we're beginning to learn the basics here. We're not, you know, we haven't lived here all our lives, but we've been here now for a decent amount of time. So we kind of get the idea. The dogs have six legs, and the plants light up and things like that. So you don't have to show us that every time. One of the rules that a comic book writer of mine, a favorite of mine, named John Byrne, who I don't subscribe to everything that he teaches, but in terms of writing, one of the things he said that made sense to me, and I watch for it, is you start a scene as far into the scene as you possibly can, yep. Right? You don't necessarily start the scene with the cop walking into the captain's office and saying, "Hey, how you doing? Here's a donut. Have some coffee." You cut to that scene where the captain's just, you know, in the middle of reading him the riot act. You know, he walked in, you know, he had a cup of coffee, you know, he gave him a donut, all that stuff is there. So I felt like the one scene in particular, when they went to go get their bird things, you know?
Yeah, the partner bird.
Right.
Yeah.
And they showed us how they climbed up the floaty rocks, right? And that took like 10 minutes. Yeah. It took 10 or 15 minutes for them to, okay, so they're floaty rocks, I get it. It's hard to climb up there, I get it. They're better than him at doing it, I get it. He's learning to do it, I get it. But we didn't need to see them climb up the entire, whatever you call the sequence of floaty rocks, the bird things.
And it was like the third time that we had seen how hard it was to climb up stuff there.
Yeah.
Right. We're continuing to see that he's inadequate. They're better than it. Well, they've lived there their whole lives. I mean, he's, you know, whatever. So that kind of slowness, the pacing of that type of stuff was kind of driving me nuts. It's the equivalent for me, in my opinion, of musicals. The only musical that I'll watch really is Popeye.
Fair enough.
And I appreciate the dead
silence. Yeah. There. Yeah, so for me, where you're hitting at is because they do that a lot. And the only time that I, thinking back on it now, that I would have sort of found acceptable is when Jake first gets in the Avatar. You know, because
yeah.
for
that first scene like that.
Yeah, for the people who maybe have not seen this, and oh, I probably should have warned you, we're going to spoil this movie. But you know, Jake, who is you know, he's paralyzed. You know, that makes sense. All the other things to me scream like the sequence from Mulan, where they're playing the song, "A Girl with Fighting For," while they're training. You know, that's where it's like, we don't need this. You could easily cut that down to, they start the climb, they finish the climb, and he looks over and, you know, or maybe he gets up there and he's out of breath, and then he looks over and, oh yeah, we're up really, really, really high.
Yeah. And how many times have you seen a sequence like that where they're doing something? A person is with another group who's really good at that, and they all pass him up and he's like, what the heck? And by the time he's climbing up, you show him climbing up and they're all waiting for him, bored to tears.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know.
I might have saved some time and maybe picked up the pacing a little bit, but you know, to Cameron's credit, he wanted, and I don't blame him, because he set another standard at that time for movies going forward. As far as what you can do, doesn't mean you should do it, but what you can do. So give Avatar credit. I hope as we get into the 2, 3, 4, 5 sequels that we may be getting at some point, that, you know, he dials that back a little bit. Maybe we get a tighter story, a tighter watch, maybe a shorter movie somewhat. Since we all know so much, please don't reintroduce us to the world like for a half an hour.
Two hours and 15 minutes would have been perfect for that movie.
Yeah.
Sure. Even shorter, I would say. But again, that's, you know, it's a visual masterpiece. It's certainly nice to look at. I really enjoy effects and worlds that don't immediately take me out of it. And very little in this movie does.
Yeah.
What's funny about some of the reviews that I had heard previously about it being kind of over the top, and I didn't think it was over the top with the effects at all. I mean, the fight scene, which is where he could have went way crazy and it just got way too in depth in terms of the graphics and the special effects, I thought he kept it fairly realistic. I mean, as realistic as you're going to make a fight scene taking place in outer space with flying birds and planes that don't exist right now. He did a good job of keeping that realistic. So I felt like it was a fight that could actually take place.
Very interesting.
And even, I would say, even the sort of the dropping out suddenly, like where I sort of critique it in the fact that it didn't seem like there was enough of an effect shown on the person. Like, I would almost equate that to in The Matrix, where you know, like maybe the first, like if you do that, it's sort of like when Neo first comes out and it's the, you know, he's gasping like he's, you know, just died and all that. But it's sort of like the, oh, hey guys, I didn't see you there, you know. And then granted, he gets, as they go on, because I think they did it like 3 or 4 times where they pulled out the characters while they were in,
you know,
while their consciousness was in the avatar. It was sort of like, there is no, like, there should be some, if the visually that we're showing is this Doctor Who warping thing that now, okay, now you're in the Na'vi creature's eyes, shouldn't there be a little bit more of a, little bit more, like maybe 10% more dramatized of, oh my gosh, as like with the last one being, put me back right now, like how he did it, that part was fine. It's like, okay, he's gotten a little bit used to Stephen Lang's character being an asshole and pulling him out.
But every time they pulled him out, they reminded us that he had no legs.
Yeah.
Like, that got a little annoying. It's like, okay, I know he has no legs. I don't need to see it every time he comes out.
Well, that was just because they, I mean, you know, again, looking at the trivia, they took a plaster cast of a paraplegic's legs and they wanted to get their money's worth out of that. So, I mean, yeah, Steve, you hit on this, that the fact that here we've got two movies coming out, you know, the Avatar 2 is supposed to come out next year, 2021. It was supposed to come out
like in what, 2012 and 2014 and 2016.
Yeah, it's part. So this is where I ask you guys to do a little bit of Nostradamus here with the 5 movies, with, like you hinted at, with the fact that it was supposed to be 2020, 2014, and it kept getting pushed back. I'm going to take a guess as to he's seeing some technology that he wants to utilize. What do you guys sort of want, you know, overall, we'll keep it general for this. for him to focus on a little bit more. I think I might know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Story.
Yeah, story.
Focus on the story. He can tell the story. He can tell it. He knows how to. He's got the technology to do it. Nothing needs to change there. The fact that he may want to means maybe he needs to develop that technology for a different story. Because, you know, not to get too off of that topic, but he runs the risk. It's 10 years. It'll be, you know,
It'll be 12 years after the first one.
So all of a sudden, you're looking at not a sequel to a movie, but a nostalgia event.
Yeah.
A Force Awakens.
Which is where, that's where I think it is already.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
I think it's there already. And if he plans, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead,
Hunter. Go ahead. You're
if he plans on making more than one sequel, the longer he waits, the more it becomes useless.
The plan is right now. At least according to IMDb, they're filming Avatar 2 and 3 right now, with Avatar 2 releasing in 2021, and then Avatar 3 releasing in 2023. They're in pre-production for 4 and 5, with 4 coming out in 2025 and 5 coming out in 2027.
I feel like that's a lofty, lofty dream.
Yeah.
Well, you guys fire up that Ouija. Let me know how that goes. I look forward to that as much as I do, like, you know, announced new road projects where I live. I'm not going to be around when they're done.
sounds like my neck of the woods, too.
I moved from California. That's a California bridge being built.
Yeah. Yeah. Living in Michigan, there's two seasons, winter and construction.
You're in Wisconsin.
California, it's construction all year.
Nice.
Yeah. He's going to run into that issue. He needs to get them rolling now if he's going to roll them out and have them work like a normal sequel trilogy does. If he continues to wait, though, the longer he waits, the more irrelevant the movie becomes.
Yeah,
because I already feel like it's kind of irrelevant now. We've already gotten other movies with CGI and special effects that are awesome. So the visuals are already going to kind of lose a little bit of what made the movie what it was in 2009. And so he's already kind of there by waiting this time for the second one.
Yeah, and you just reminded me of a point I wanted to hit on with the fact that, Steve, that you had said that the visual effects, especially with the Na'vi, looked so realistic. Have either of you guys seen Welcome to Marwen? I was looking at, because I have it on Blu-ray.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
So that, to get quickly review that one, it's the Steve Carell movie where he plays he plays a guy that's happened in real life that he they downplay. I think that he likes wearing women's clothing. They just say he likes wearing women's shoes in here. He gets beat up, and to help him cope, he set up this town called Marwen. In the movie, it's called Marwen. It has a different name because it's his name, Mark, and then his wife or someone. It's her name is the second part.
It's like all miniatures, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're all like they're all G.I. Joe, like 12 inch action figures.
That's right.
So watching that, I watched the special features on it, and. Steve, I'm going to tell you this to check it out, because they have better visuals on the actors, because they do. And this is, again, the movie came out, 2 years ago. What they did with the toys, it's all CGI. The only parts that are actually from the recordings when they were doing the same setup like they do with Avatar are the eyes and the mouth, because, again, another really great director who gets down to the tiny details, because when you look at a lot of animated movies, you see the dead eyes. You don't see the emotion in the eyes. So they recorded the faces and cut out the eyes. Well, not literally, but actually cut out the recordings around the eyes and the mouths of the actors doing the performances. That's possibly what I'm thinking, you know, that we could have J.J. Abrams. Who was the director?
James Cameron.
James Cameron. That's what I was thinking of. I'm like, I don't know why J.J. Abrams came up in my head, but James Cameron could be using for, you know, the future movies, you know, future Avatar sequels, is that technique, because you look at it, and even with watching the trailers, I'm like, those toys look so real. Like I'm seeing Steve Carell and, I can't think of her name, Merritt something, she was on Walking Dead, and all these actors that are in here, in, you know, like they were actually doing it they were, but like somehow they got the arms to look like toys.
Well, if they if it's better than small soldiers, then I'm with you. But it's going to take a lot to top that, let me tell you.
Well, it is. The story got a little bit ragged on, or the movie did, but it's a well-oiled thing. The point I am making with this, because it's not like I'm trying to talk about a different movie, is that special effects, and it's that, you know, James Cameron and Robert Zemeckis are those two where if the technology is not right, they will try to wait and for the technology to get there to where they can do their vision. So I'm sort of hoping James Cameron might borrow some stuff from that, you know, like get, you know, like instead of just putting dots all over the actors' faces, which, I mean, makes it passable, but I mean, you look at the Avengers movies and, you know, Star Wars and all these other movies, and it's like, all right, we know how they did that. You know, the surprise is, oh, it was practical.
And that's the fear I have with him. I mean, I have a 23-year-old son who is a huge sci-fi guy, went to see Avatar, I think, 3 times in the theater when it first came out. And when we sat down to watch it last night, we were talking about the sequel coming out, and he was disinterested. He didn't even care.
Oh, wow.
He's moved on.
And so you're talking about somebody who literally goes and sees everything multiple times that's science fiction. And he's not looking forward to it. It wasn't even on his radar.
Yeah.
You're going to have to market it. Whereas normally they still would, but maybe not as heavy or as hard. They'll have to market it.
So do you think there, and this is going to get into the rating of the movie. I'm sort of going to switch stuff around here. Do you think for the sequels, it would almost be better to do a soft reboot, with the superhero movies, like with Suicide Squad and the Suicide Squad, the new one with James Gunn as the director, where they're using some of the characters, but it's a whole new story.
No, we invested. Look, I mean, we invested 3 hours.
Yeah.
And he knows that the audience that made this the highest grossing movie before Endgame, and continues to snap it up, I'm sure today even, that would talk about disinterest, because, you know, Hunter, maybe your son, when he starts seeing commercials and trailers and hears the buzz, maybe that'll flip a trigger in the back of his head and say, well, okay, maybe I'm interested. Maybe he won't be, but maybe I am. Oh, it's a whole new, it's like Avatar is just the brand name, and this is a whole new. Oh, I could care less. I'm even more interested now. Yeah,
I agree. There's no way you could possibly do that.
I mean, I don't want more kids. I'm going to learn new stuff about the kids I already have. Please, no more kids.
And to hit on your Steve, what you said before, where it's slowly creeping up. It is third for lifetime gross behind Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and Avengers Endgame. But yeah, I mean, I only say that because, like, I only brought that up because, you know, keeping the same, some of the surviving characters, not that the actors died, but the characters did, and the, you know, in there, but telling, you know, where we're focusing more on other characters, I'm thinking, okay, that might be a way to get more out of it and to get people who, you know, are big sci-fi fans and, you know, saw the movie then and then that maybe they rewatched it now. Because it's on Disney Plus, and they're sort of like, okay, I mean, it was a thing. Maybe, I don't know, I was thinking maybe the soft reboot might be part of the solution, but I think I might be wrong with how you guys were talking. So I'm gonna go down that road here. For, you know, we're gonna do Cast the Remake. This is, you know, two through five don't come through. We're playing in a hypothetical, you know. If this is Community, we've rolled the dice and it's come up 3. But we get to cast the remake. Who do you put in there for, and we'll do with the 5 characters that we have here. So, you know, casting for replacing Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Stephen Lang, Michelle Rodriguez, and Sigourney Weaver. So who would you guys put in there?
If we're real just quick. Doing this for money, yep. I mean, you have John Cena and The Rock automatic.
Okay. So for that, now, cause you're talking to a wrestling fan on this one. Who do you put in which spot?
Oh, John Cena plays Worthington.
John Cena does the Sam Worthington one.
Yeah. And then The Rock would play, you can make The Rock a new character, but he's the bad, good guy.
He's the bad, good guy.
Yeah.
Like he thinks he's doing good, but it's, you know, really not.
He's really screwing everything up.
Okay. All right, I could see that, even though that was like, what, two WrestleManias in a row, but what?
Hey, the budget is what it is. You got to make money on it.
No, yeah, definitely. So who do you see playing John Cena's love interest? Don't say Nikki Bella.
Go away from wrestling. Let's see here. John Cena's love interest.
Keep in mind we don't actually see her.
That's true. So because I think Jennifer Love Hewitt is hot, I could just make this character Jennifer Love Hewitt because it's an alien anyways.
Yeah.
It's Jennifer Love Hewitt.
There you go. So for the wise teacher for the Grace character, because so far I'm agreeing with you on all of these. I might have an alternative pick for the Zoe Saldana.
I'm sure.
Character, but I could see Jennifer Love Hewitt in that role. But so for the Sigourney Weaver Grace, you know, the wise older, well, not older person who's been there, knows the program. Who could you see in that spot?
Sandra Bullock. Yeah, we're gonna have her play the wise doctor. She's gonna bring back kind of the role from, what was it, the Pelican Brief? I think, was that the movie she was in? Oh, what's that movie where the town gets contaminated by the oil company or something, and she goes in and fixes the town as a lawyer? Either one of you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, wait.
Wait, not. Miss Congeniality?
Oh, Aaron Brockovich.
Is it Aaron Brockovich?
That's Julia, Julia Roberts.
Yeah, that's what's like.
That's who we want. That's who we want. No, we want Julia Roberts there. Okay, that's who we're going with.
Okay.
We want her to play that same character as a doctor, though, in the movie.
Okay, nice. And then, so the only one that we really have left is the Michelle Rodriguez character, which I will say this, I don't know anyone who could play that role any different and be good. That's the one spot that I'm like, I think it would have to be Michelle Rodriguez.
And she seems to fit with The Rock pretty well, if you're going to...
Yeah, you've got the connection from the
the
Fast and Furious movies. Steve, is there any changes that you would make to our lineup?
I am so horrible at this stuff, just because I'm like, well, geez, obviously Cameron knew what he was doing. I don't know, maybe Zoe Saldana from Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe, or that one guy from Clash of the Titans, maybe, for the Jake Sully dude. you know that really tough guy from the where they go back to the dinosaur time show? Remember that show? Did they? Okay, well, it's the same guy. But I'm so bad at that, and I'm like, oh, they exist. When I can't think of actors really, unless it's Tom Hanks, unless they're in something that I'm watching. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm horrible at that.
Well, and of course, you always have the default of Idris Elba.
Yes, Johnny Depp. Let's see, who else is in every movie? Nicolas Cage. He can play three or four.
Johnny Depp is just going to play the pirate character if we put him out there. So, yeah. I mean, exactly. Then we're going to end up with Captain Jack Sparrow playing on a planet.
Well, it is a Disney property now, so why wouldn't they be watching that on their little video monitors and stuff, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but I would only put Johnny Depp in there if this was a Tim Burton remake of Avatar. Because then you've got two of the roles right there filled up. You got Helena Bonham Carter coming in playing a role, probably the Grace role. And then, actually, this is where I would do it. I would put Johnny Depp in the villain role, the Stephen Lang antagonist role.
Mm. He could do, I mean, I think he's talented enough he could do it.
Oh, yeah.
It would not be that guy. He would not be the guy that we all think should be playing Cable. He'd be a different guy. He'd be a Johnny Depp dude, an army guy. But it would be a different, slant, which would be interesting. Yeah, that's the kind of the idea of taking a second look at that.
Yeah,
which I'm okay with that because I thought the army guy himself was just over the top. So,
right.
I mean, if you casted it differently and gave me I don't want to call Johnny Depp feminine, but he's like the feminine version of that, and let him play it with a little bit more feminineness.
Well, you could argue the word I think of is sly, right? He wouldn't be so handsome.
That's a good word.
He wouldn't be so ham-fisted. He would definitely be the guy who brings out the big ship and wants to blow up the big tree and all that kind of stuff. But he wouldn't be, let's get home before dinner. And he wouldn't be that guy. And
he'd be more tactful about it.
I want to get home in time for Masterpiece Theater. Let's move. Come on. Chop, chop. But the point would be the same. He would still have the same goal, the same aim, but his motivations would be different.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. So... I'm tweaking the rating system a little bit because I'm not a huge fan of it. I like the rating system, but mine's going to have the caveat. Basically, you have no money to $10. How much would you have paid to see, or how much would you pay if, to see this in the movie theater?
Geez, if it's only $10, I'll take that. But I guess we're rating it up. We're putting that up against how much we like it. We can pay as much as we feel it deserves.
Yeah.
I'd give it $5.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just funny, again, because
I didn't like the movie probably as much as you, I don't think, but I'd give it $7.
All right, just to
see the effects and the visuals of it in the theater, I'd give it $7.
Yeah.
My concern is that, again, especially nowadays where you've got so much other stimulation just waiting for you. You know, like, I started watching Avatar, but I ended up watching TikTok for 2 hours. it's so easy to get distracted. Even in the theater, if I'm not engaged in the movie, then I start thinking about other stuff.
Like, yeah.
Did I change the cat pan? Did I pay the cell phone bill? You know, are my kids' grades okay? You know, which is all important stuff, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here to take a little break so I can get out of that. But
escape reality.
Yeah. I mean, I could maybe find a couple of bucks in loose change to toss in there too and make sure that Hunter doesn't make me look like a cheapskate. But I mean, it's one of those things where I'm entertained. I enjoyed the movie. There are a lot of fun parts about it. I was in awe of the world and how they built it and how real it did look between the creatures and the plants and the world itself and the machines and, you know, the whole thing. But there were just those little things that just, you know, kind of popped my tire every once in a while and reminded me that I was watching a movie, not experiencing something out my window.
Kind of wish I had seen it in 2009. Only because we've been like oversaturated with all the special effects in like the Marvel universe and the new Star Wars stuff. I kind of wish that I had seen it then as compared to now.
I would love to see, you know, and I'd give another $7 to see the sequel that is smaller.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if he's doing five of these things, do a smaller one and then ramp it up again.
So Hunter, you actually hit on, like, I'm going to ask you this question that hits on how I typically rate movies on my other podcast, to quote one Mick Foley, elsinors.com, bang, bang. there's my cheap pop. this is 2009. You are at the movie theater. Do you pay the, and I'm going to use what it is for my local theater. Do you pay the $6.50 to see it just regular, or do you pay the extra $2 to see it in 3D?
No, the glasses annoy me. I'm just watching it regular.
Okay. All right. Because that's how I, when I do talk about movies on my other show, I don't like to give a star rating or a, like, this is a dollar rating, because I feel like, you know, you ask me in a month and that will change.
Yeah.
So to fulfill this, I'm right around there with you guys. I would say probably, you know, I'd probably be splitting the difference between you guys and say probably about $6. But this wouldn't be a movie that I would go see in theaters. This would be, you know, especially like waiting and hearing the buzz on it, maybe seeing it at the highest that I would do at the end of its in theater run. And maybe spending the extra money on the movie or on the 3D. If they say, oh, the 3D is really good, you got to go see it in 3D. But it would be a solid either purchasing it on, you know, physical media or streaming it through a service, whichever service it would come out on. That's just sort of how I rate it, you know, like where I would more than likely see it, with the lowest being skip it and just above it being finding alternative means.
I'm with you. I don't think I'd go see it twice like a lot of people did. Don't get the fascination with that. And my TV at home is pretty badass, so I'm pretty good with watching things at my house.
Nice. All right. So closing remarks. Basically, before I wrap up, Hunter, I'm going to let you pimp whatever you want to pimp right now.
Check us out at the Maybe I Do, Maybe I Don't podcast. Basically, it's a show that has general talking points. We talk about anything that's going on in the world, TV, music, movies. We don't review, but basically you're going to get my opinion. And I'm usually, I don't know, if you ask my wife, I'm usually wrong. But the point of the show is maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't matter. It's my show.
Nice.
Under that.
All right. Indeed. Yeah, give that a subscribe on all of the things you can find that on. Steve, you got any closing remarks before I close out the show?
Well, I don't currently put out a podcast. I used to run one called The Voice of Steve, and it's still out there. There are like 6 or 8 episodes. If you're looking for nostalgia, if you want me to talk about, you know, want to hear what I thought about what was going on in 2016, you can go and tune into that and what have you. I am a voice actor, although you can tell from my voice, I actually took a little break from that. I do want to just, if I may, toot my own horn for just a quick second.
Beep away, sir.
Well, yeah, last night I took, for the 6th year in a row, I took third place in the Thumbtack Gargling / Harvey Firestein Impression Contest. So I'm hoping to do better as time goes on. That was much funnier when I went down. But
oh, no, that was great. I muted my microphone because I was laughing. Unmute.
Isn't that polite? That's nice of you.
No, I didn't want to cover up the plug.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So The Voice of Steve is the name of my voiceover business. You can go to thevoiceofstevevo.com to check that out. I've got a couple of demos up there. You can shoot me an email. If you are someone who is in need of a voice, please do not use this voice as the example of what you'd be getting by working with me. My demos on the website will do that much better. Steve@thevoiceofstevevo is my email at vo.com. Let's try that again. Steve@thevoiceofstevevo.com is the email address. I'm also on Facebook there's the Voice of Steve and all that kind of stuff. So if you need some help, I'm happy to do that as soon as I get this last thumbtack out of my throat.
All right. And real quick for me, easiest way is the link tree that I am working on. It's linktr.ee/thatgregor. It will have all the places that I am on, or that I am online, including the Elts Nerds and Galactic Netcasts and here, wherever I'm at. But for you guys at home, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review. You can email us at oraclepodcasts@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nowyouveseenit. And you can check this and other wonderful podcasts out at oraclepodcasts.com. Our theme music is performed by Eric Hunt, and we'd like to give a special thank you besides to Steve and to Hunter, my great panelist and guest respectively, to our broadcasting partners at Age of Radio and at Galactic Netcast, my home. You could find more about them at ageofradio.org and gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com. Age of Radio is just Age of Radio. And the final thing to be said is, like I said at the top of the show, because this is just called Now You've Seen It, I want to preface this. We mean this in good fun. You hear that someone hasn't seen a movie, like, for example, at the time of this recording, I have not seen Rise of Skywalker, even though it's been out for damn near a month. That doesn't mean you berate them and you harass them. We all have our lives, and be kind to each other. And that's an end.
Now You've Seen It is a production of Oracle Media Productions in association with Age of Radio and Galactic Netcasts. For more great podcasts, visit oraclepodcasts.com, ageofradio.org, and gncasts.com.